Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. Thanksgiving is tomorrow, the first big family get-together since impeachment hearings began, one of the last before an election year. It's a holiday about gratitude, togetherness, and of course, food. But the kitchen isn't the only place where things can get messy, when politics can dominate the conversation at the table. So how do we talk to brothers, sisters, cousins, uncles, and aunts who might be from the other side of the political divide? Should we just avoid the subject altogether? This hour on Point, Thanksgiving, family politics, and keeping our eyes on the pies. You can join us. What do you do when beliefs that you hold dear offend the people you hold dear? Should you avoid turning Thanksgiving dinner into a debate? Or is politics just part of the menu? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org and on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With us from Colchester, Vermont, is Lizzie Post. She's the co-president of the Emily Post Institute, which was created by her great-great-grandmother, etiquette expert Emily Post. She's the author of several books on etiquette and the co-host of Awesome Etiquette, a podcast from American Public Media. Lizzie Post, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate it.
And also joining us from Washington, D.C. is Dana Milbank. He's an op-ed columnist at The Washington Post covering national politics. Dana, welcome to you. It's great to have you.
It's great to be with you, though I'm quite nervous being with an etiquette expert.
Please don't be. My friends and family always laugh at statements like that.
It set the right tone, though, because that's what we want to talk about. Well, Dana, since you spoke first, let me talk to you first about this. So a poll from NPR PBS indicates that 63% of American adults are following the impeachment inquiry closely. Will they be able to resist talking about it tomorrow?
Well, will they or should they are two entirely different things.
Absolutely.
Should they? Yes, because it gets us nowhere, which I'm sure we will get into to some extent. Will they? Almost certainly. The one thing I would say at the outset is because of the divisive nature of politics and because things have become so tribal that it's often divided by religion, by race, by where you live, by the community you're in. Often families are homogenous in a sense you're sitting around a table and everybody agrees in this Democratic family and in this Republican family, everybody agrees. So it may not be a problem for everybody because we happen to be in such a polarized time. But for the rest, yes, very more dangerous than undercooked stuffing.
So, Lizzie, I want to ask you about how etiquette around politics has changed. I mean, the conventional etiquette taught us to avoid conversations at dinner about sex, about religion, about money and politics. Is it still taboo to bring it up?
It's not so much that they are taboo. It's more that we really try to think of things in like tiers of kind of approachable topics. And in tier one, you're really looking at things like weather, sports, entertainment. This is low-hanging fruit that's probably not going to be too likely, depending on the sports and the entertainment that you're talking about, to drive really deeply held personal opinions or choices in lifestyle and identity. And when you start to ramp up to tiers two and three, you know, tier two, we really look at as having politics, personal relationships, religion, you know, and money can either be a tier two or a tier three. But we think of like personal family matters, finance, and often medical issues in those tier three categories where you're really trying to keep them as conversations that you have with people that you really trust, people that really understand you, people that you're willing to invite into those topics in your life. And politics can really end up, I feel like, in any of these three categories. For me, the big issue, and when we're speaking about this in our business etiquette seminars, we say, you know, politics isn't a taboo topic, but it's how you talk about it that's really going to matter. Are you able to be aware of the other perspectives and lifestyles and personalities at the table? Are you able to make choices that are going to build the relationships and the conversation around you rather than tear them down or purposefully incite anger and frustration or offense in people? And I think that's where politics gets so sticky. It's how are we choosing to talk about it?
I'm really glad you brought that up, this idea of how you talk about politics. So here's part of a memorable 2015 Saturday Night Live skit on this subject. A family has assembled for Thanksgiving. Relatives have arrived from out of town, and awkward conversations about politics ensue. Here's a little bit of it.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I am so thankful to have you all here today.
I am thankful that I only burned the turkey a little bit. I'm sorry, gang.
You know, I am thankful that our governor is not going to let those refugees in here.
Oh, my God.
You know, I heard the refugees are all ISIS in disguise.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I actually saw an ISIS in the A&P today when I was picking up the yams.
No, you didn't, Aunt Kathy. That was an Asian woman.
I saw two transgenders at the airport. They still look kind of pretty.
Very interesting trend, this.
Oh, my God.
Transgender is not a trend, Mr. Paul.
And there weren't any around when I was younger.
Yeah, they were there, but they couldn't say anything, so they lived sad lives and died.
No, talking about Thanksgiving.
Hello. It's me.
Okay, so Adele to the rescue. So in that skit, there's a visual component that obviously we're not able to appreciate here on the radio, but as everyone starts pantomiming her song, they come together. But Lizzie Post, an example there of how not to talk about politics, perhaps.
Yeah, not even just perhaps. I would take a stand on that and say, yeah, that's not the way you want it to go. Great to laugh about, but I think we really do want to be aware of the people around us. And as a host, you really want to feel empowered to do something about this in the moment. And I think that's where a lot of people get very nervous, and they're unsure about how much agency they have to redirect a conversation, to shut down an offensive conversation, to even request that people avoid the topic. And we really love at Emily Post to empower hosts to do such things. But again, it's in how you do it. I think if you send a blanket email out before or upon greeting people at the door, say, and remember, no politics this year, or I don't want politics anywhere at my table or anywhere at my Thanksgiving, that's not the how we're looking for.
What is the how? How would you do it?
It depends a little bit on what your preference is. You know, a pound of, or a, what do they say? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I think sometimes that works in this situation, and you have to know your family or your friends or the people that you've invited to your gathering in order to decide whether saying out loud, or when people are RSVPing, saying, yes, we are going to come to Thanksgiving this year, if now is the time to say, I am so excited to have you. I know our family has a lot of different opinions in it. I would love to leave politics off the menu for the day or for the evening, or whether it's going to be better to wait and see if the topic actually gets brought up, and in that moment then say to someone, you know, I'd really love to leave politics away from the table.
Right.
Uncle George, tell me about that, and this is my ever example, trip to Greece this year, or, you know, how you know, how was Sally's wedding? Whatever it is that can be a way to redirect that conversation. It's just a great tool to have in your back pocket. And we really want hosts to feel comfortable doing these things. But again, it's going to depend on your family and your hosting style, whether or not, you know, announcing it ahead of time or calling it out in the moment is going to be the better action to take.
So Dana, I'd like to ask you about that idea, just sort of suggesting that we not talk about this at all. How would that work in the Milbank family? I mean, you have some pretty strong political opinions. Everyone knows about them because they read the Washington Post. You know, do you hold back at the table? What do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting in my family, it's my immediate family, there's not a whole lot of disagreement. But when we get together with the extended family, some of whom are from rural Indiana, there's quite a bit of difference. And I think you behave differently in those situations. In the extended family situation, I never bring up politics for the reasons we're discussing here. But often somebody else will bring up politics. Then the question is, what do you do? So I find it certainly best not to argue back.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being, it doesn't do any good anyway. Like, let's look at the example we've just had day after day, hour after hour of impeachment hearings and yelling and screaming from either side. Before this all started, and to the point after it started, the polls show we are in exactly the same place. Virtually nobody changed their mind. So if that's not going to change anybody's mind, you're arguing with your uncle over the table is not going to change his mind. So it just doesn't make sense to do. What I do to try to diffuse it, and this is true with family or with anybody. I frequently get people who argue by email or in person. I just ask them questions. I ask them to explain themselves some more and say, you know, isn't that interesting? And try to find some piece of what they're saying where I say, okay, well, I think we can agree on this. So to sort of try to diffuse it and disarm rather than arguing back, which is only going to make them angrier.
Right. Listeners, we're talking about political battle lines at the Thanksgiving table. You can join the conversation. Does your family Thanksgiving gathering need a referee? Or what advice do you have for finding common ground? Is it a good idea just to set ground rules and say, we're not going to talk about this? Or maybe having a conversation and making an effort to listen to that other opinion across the table would begin go a long way toward knitting this country back together. Who knows? I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast. Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about politics at Thanksgiving. You can join the conversation. Are you establishing ground rules this Thanksgiving about what guests can talk about and what's taboo? Are you practicing your political talking points for Uncle Jerry and Sister Sue? I'm joined by Lizzie Post, co-president of the Emily Post Institute and the co-host of Awesome Etiquette, a podcast from American Public Media, and Dana Milbank, an op-ed columnist at the Washington Post covering national politics. And Lizzie and Dana, I want to go to a couple of calls. Let's go to Marcus, who's calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Marcus, thanks so much for the call. Go ahead.
Hello. So I don't think that ignoring the white elephant in the room is going to be productive. It'll create some other awkward, intense situations. I think what we need to do is avoid attacking each other and actually take a step back and sit back and listen to each other's points and try and hear where the other person is coming from. And by listening, maybe then they will take the opportunity to listen to where you're coming from and actually start to produce some creative, like, productive discussions. As former Israeli Prime Minister Moshe Dayan said, you don't create peace by only talking to those who agree with you. You create peace by talking to those who don't.
Marcus, do you expect politics to come up in your family Thanksgiving gathering tomorrow?
Typically it does. It's split pretty close to 50-50 between Republicans and Democrats in our clan.
Okay. Well, good luck. Good luck with that. And thanks for that comment. We appreciate it. Let's take one more call. John is calling from Portland, Maine. Go ahead, John. You're on the air. Thanks for the call.
Hi, folks. Yes, I'm with Marcus. And I think that the advice we should be getting is what Ms. Post was getting into a little, and that's how we talk about politics. The reason why I think we should is that our democracy is under a certain amount of stress, and these things need to be talked through. And the people that gather for Thanksgiving often includes folks who don't ordinarily hang out together. This is a good time for us to try and discuss the major issues of the day.
John, thanks so much for that. Lizzie Post, what do you hear in those two calls? I find them encouraging. I mean, I think it's,
I do too.
I mean, I think it's. I agree with both callers that it seems impossible to sort of avoid talking about it. But they're talking about the sort of productive nature of talking about it.
Absolutely. And I don't think it's impossible to avoid it. I do think that hosts and family and friend groups really want to ask themselves, what kind of a gathering do we want to have? You know, what do we collectively feel is important and creates vibrant, stimulating conversation? What I love about what both Marcus and Dana have talked about today is the idea, and I believe John too, the idea of being curious, going to a place of curiosity about what differing views are. You know, why do you feel the way that you do? What do you see in this particular candidate, person, law that's being passed, whatever it is or circumstance that we're discussing, going to that place of curiosity is really important. But I love that John's really hearing the point of that the how matters. It's one thing to share our views. It's another to share our views in ways that show we're never going to change them. We're not willing to listen. And I think when it comes to etiquette, we really try to avoid the latter at the dinner table, at least, or at these family gatherings, because we do want to have a good time with one another. And that exchange can be just so wonderful, but it does matter that we take care in how we choose to listen to each other. You may be very willing to be curious about someone else's point of view and listen to them and really respect that. But what's really fascinating is when that then doesn't get returned to you in a conversation, how are you going to choose to behave, receive that person if they're not choosing to meet you at that level of curiosity and respect and consideration?
Yeah. What do you think about that, Dana? I mean, I can imagine you wanting to listen to an opposing view, but if someone fires back at you in a way that might not be conducive to sort of thoughtful and caring conversation, what's the response?
Well, it's very tricky, and it'll depend on how much wine you've had with your turkey at that point. But, there is a way to do this because, you know, the dirty little secret is we are, as Americans, are terribly divided by partisanship, but we're not actually that much divided by policy. That is what we want. There are actually a broad consensus on policies in America. Just when things get the D or R label, it becomes, you know, like sports teams in a game. And you see this in, you know, the Republican Party was all about free trade. Then Donald Trump comes in, and now it's about protectionism. And of course, Democrats managed to, you know, do a flip, you know, saying the economy was great under Obama, and now not thinking it's great under Trump. So that tends to color everything. So to the extent to which you can talk about issues and get away from politics, you'll be in a better place. What I do when I'm being attacked For something I've written or something I've said. In fact, I did this with a prominent Republican congressman just within the last couple of weeks. I said, I'd like to talk to you about how we get out of this mess that we're in. What do you think the solution is? So you're, you know, giving respect and some power to the person who disagrees with you, and maybe that will diffuse the moment and put them in a position of actually saying how they think we can fix this, because everybody agrees that the situation is not tolerable.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like one of the sort of polite ways you could do this is you know, let's acknowledge that these are unusual and troubled times, and part of the trouble is that the nation is so divided. So let's use this occasion maybe to raise a glass and hope we can come together for the common good. I mean, maybe there's a way to frame it with a conversation that begins like that. Let's go to Peter. He's calling from Weston, Massachusetts. Go ahead, Peter. Thanks for the call.
Hi. I was born and bred Emily Post, and it is my understanding that an occasion like Thanksgiving is for just that, giving thanks. And we don't vote for family members. We are born genetically attached to family members. And so, in my opinion, politics has no place at a Thanksgiving or any other celebratory event. It is for caring, loving, supporting, and doing whatever you can to enhance the experience of those around you. If politics comes up at a family celebration at my table, I shut it down. I said, that's not what we're here for.
All right, Peter. Well, thanks so much for that. There's an approach that we can all understand and respect. I want to bring another guest into the conversation. Joining us from Garden City, South Carolina, is Lynn Parsley. She's a family and marriage counselor based in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and the author of Staying Together for at Least 50 Years, Keeping Love Alive for a Lifetime. Lynn Parsley, welcome to On Point. It's good to have you.
It is good to be with you.
So you've been listening along. I've got some specific questions for you, but I'm sure you've been sort of collecting some thoughts of your own as you listen. What do you think?
Well, I was listening to Dana and Lizzie and thinking, well, what am I going to say when I come on? They have hit a lot of my points, and I hope I have some extra things to add.
Well, what I wanted to ask you about, you've written about something called agreeable disagreement. How does that work?
It's along the lines of things that Dana and Lizzie have said about how to have a conversation that is an exchange of ideas and thoughts and feelings and ends on a good note of goodwill.
Interesting. So say more about that. So you're still able to put the disagreement sort of on the table, as it were, but you do it with a sense of goodwill, right?
Right. I hold the belief of one of the callers that we can't just stay silent in order to get along all the time. I think that when you have dearly held beliefs that you want to express, that's part of the American way, and it's the way things change. I think that my view is that you start with asking yourself, what is my intention as I enter this conversation? Am I looking to change their mind, which, as Dana said, is probably an exercise in futility, or am I looking to understand them better and maybe have them be open to hearing my point of view and understanding it?
Well, to this idea of agreeable disagreement, I want to play a cut of tape, which I was very moved by. This was from the New York Times podcast, The Daily, last November. You're going to hear Tess Clark. She's an evangelical Christian who opposes President Trump's immigration policy. Now, Tess is in conversation with her father, essentially, who is very much in favor of the president. So you're going to first hear the father, and then you're going to hear Tess, the daughter. They obviously disagree, but they're engaging in a very sort of human effort to understand each other. Let's listen.
Well, I mean, you know, that's certainly an isolated case. I mean, of course, who wouldn't be sympathetic, compassionate to what you've personally experienced? But, I mean, not every case is like that. I mean, I don't feel like everybody that's crossing that border is doing it for what they're claiming. They're the ones putting themselves in this position coming over here. They're not all being persecuted. I mean, what do you, would you like to see them do? You're talking about these, you know, fences and, you know, cages. And I mean, this is all temporary stuff. I'm not sure what the answer is, but got to contain them to some degree.
But it feels like the human piece is missing for me with the current administration and the current policies. And that's what I'm upset about.
So, Lizzie Post, I want to come to you on that. What was sort of extraordinary about that conversation, and it's really worth listening to the whole thing, is they obviously disagree about something that's so important. But the overall context is, Dad, I really love you, and I really want you to hear my point. The dad's sort of gives the same kind of energy back. You know, you're my daughter, and I love you, and I'm really interested to hear what you have to say, even though we disagree.
I think that it is a great example of choosing to be polite and choosing to, I think, look at the whole of the relationship around the conversation that's happening, and, you know, respectfully choosing to both listen and state your point. It also does it. And I haven't heard the whole conversation, but it doesn't sound like they go so far down the rabbit hole that then they're just in circles saying the same things over and over and over again, which I think also can get to a frustrating point and start to just make people feel like there's no end.
To add a little more context to that conversation, sorry to interrupt, but I want to, it's a really interesting point. I mean, I just really implore everyone to go listen to it, because they don't sort of circle around and become frustrated with each other. What you hear is a real effort to understand each other. I don't think they succeed in sort of convincing each other, but they're really making an effort because they love each other and they really want to understand. But go ahead, Lizzie. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, mostly I just really wanted to appreciate the comments that both you and Dana had when it came to ideas like seeking solutions or raising a glass to the idea that we will be able to come together at some point, or there will be some kind of a resolution, you know, and that to me is so impactful and so important. And a lot of people forget that it's an avenue to take when things do get heated and they do get frustrating is, okay, so if we're going to disagree about how we ended up here or any number of things, what are some of the solutions? What are the things that we can agree on? We want good things for each other. How do we accomplish that? You might not solve it over the dinner table, but it could lead to some really wonderful discussion.
Let's go to Ismail, who's calling from Boston. Ismail, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well. What's on your mind? Go ahead.
Yeah, my mind is, it's kind of like when you're at the dinner table, other things, not just politics. I mean, you could come to the dinner table as a gay person, a Muslim, a Christian, all the things that are affecting this country. Either way, things will be said that will make you feel a certain way. And if you center the conversation around, hey, you say this, it makes me feel this way. When the party says this, it makes me feel this way. So you have the conversation around feelings is a good way of handling some of these difficult conversations.
Thanks for that point, Ismail. I really appreciate it. Lynn Parsley, I wanted to come back to you and ask you, you know, as someone who's a family counselor, what should you do if you feel yourself, you know, you started a conversation and you have all the good intentions in the world just to have a conversation, but suddenly someone crosses a line and you feel yourself getting angry, right? That's when things begin to go off the tracks. Any advice?
I do. First of all, take deep breaths and remind yourself that you care about that person, that you have a relationship and you want to maintain the relationship, and to try to think again of, what do we hold in common? I call it the postage stamp in the football field, that there can always be that little piece that you start from and saying, we agree on this, our feelings are similar about this. And I find it to be very helpful to listen to the other person after. I'll ask them a question like, you know, what is your belief that is behind this opinion that you hold? What is your dearly held belief behind that opinion? And then really listen, and then grant to them, I can see your point about this. I can see that you have a real meaningful point here, and you can see a face change when you say, I give you that. And then it becomes softer and gentler, because then they can maybe give us something as we say what we want to say. So it's mainly a tone. It's a look in your eye. It's taking those deep breaths and reminding yourself, I'm not here to make them believe what I believe. I'm here to tell my story and to hear their story. And in my involvement with families and with church and in community development, that it's the stories we tell that really open people's hearts. And so if you get the opportunity to say, the story behind this belief that I hold is this, and I will express my feelings, my experiences, and invite them to do that, then I think it keeps everything tapped down to a kindness rather than a point-counterpoint.
Listeners, we're talking about how to address politics at the Thanksgiving table at a moment when America seems so divided, and in fact, when families reflect that division. You can join the conversation. How are you planning to navigate political discord at tomorrow's dinner? Do you feel capable of containing your anger when someone crosses that line? Is it better just to shut the conversation down and say, let's focus on the turkey, the wine, and forget about politics? We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with more of your calls and our guests. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking Thanksgiving and politics within families that might reflect the political divide of these contentious times. You can join the conversation. Has the tone of your family gatherings changed in this political moment? Or have your loved ones always enjoyed a healthy debate? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm joined by Lizzie Post, co-president of the Emily Post Institute and the co-host of Awesome Etiquette, a podcast from American Public Media. Lynn Parsley, a family and marriage counselor, and Dana Milbank, an opinion columnist with The Washington Post who covers politics. And you, our callers, you can join this conversation. Let's go to Susan, who's calling from Wakefield, Rhode Island. Susan, thanks for the call. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
Yeah, my approach to this is sort of a middle ground, which is sort of the way I approach most things, is my mindset is, well, President Trump and politics, they're not necessarily invited to my dinner table, but if they show up for pie when people aren't a captive audience, that would be fine.
So in other words, when people are milling around and can leave the room without making a statement, it's okay to talk about it.
Right. I mean, I don't typically forbid it at the table, but I feel like, you know, for a holiday dinner, when you're there to just sort of celebrate and be together, that might be an easier approach when people, can sort of opt in or not.
Susan, it sounds like sound advice. Thanks for the call. Let me get one more in here. Jay is calling from North Yarmouth, Maine. Jay, go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for the call.
Hello. I just wanted to offer up something for consideration. People might find it useful. I like to, when confronted with relatives that believe different things that you believe, I like to go back to the basics of getting your information from primary sources versus secondary sources. In civics class, we learned that whenever possible, we try to get information from primary sources. So, I mean, to make it practical, information from primary sources is more can be more reliable is certainly more direct, as opposed to listening to your favorite spin doctor, whether it be radio or TV or editorials or whatever. So I try to inject that concept. How do you know what you know? Did you get it from a primary source or a secondary source?
All right, Jay, thanks a lot. Dana, what do you think about that? I mean, in terms of, I mean, Jay's talking about bringing kind of reason and logic to political conversation where reason and logic don't always don't always follow.
I support the logic of that, but I think that's quite dangerous because when you say you're essentially saying somebody's wrong or is uninformed, that their information is wrong, and I can see that quickly devolving, you know, and going down this rabbit hole of Sean Hannity versus Rachel Maddow, and that's not going to get you to the place where you want. What I try to do when somebody's in my face. Disagreeing or saying things I know to be false, not correcting them, but having a bit of compassion for how they feel. So I may think they're wrong. I may disagree with them on the facts. But when I look at the vast majority of Trump supporters, I know that he is appealing to a real fear. That they're losing their place economically, they're losing their place in America. He has unfortunately turned that into, I think, divisive issues of race and religion and immigration status. But if you can say this person who appears in front of me to be so angry is really afraid, and I think there's an equivalent thing if you look at it on the left as well. We're all operating really more out of a place of vulnerability, out of fear, than out of anger, and if you can get to that, I think that will cool down the tone a little bit. But I have never found that trying to correct somebody on the facts gets them to say, "I agree with you."
I want to bring up a really interesting idea here and get you all to respond to it. So Timothy Phillips, he's founder and CEO of Beyond Conflict, an international organization that advocates for peace and reconciliation. He posted a piece on our Cognoscenti website here at WBUR in Boston. And basically, one of his arguments is that we tend to overestimate how unpleasant it is to engage with those with whom we disagree. And he cites a recent study from the Harvard Kennedy School that found that partisan voters ended up agreeing with the opposition more than they thought they would and didn't feel as many negative emotions, annoyance, being resentful, nervous, anger, afraid, as they predicted they would. So his sort of one of his concluding ideas is if we're going to correct our mistaken beliefs about voters across the country, we should start with the voter across the table. And we might be surprised by what we learn. What do you think of that, that idea, Lizzie?
I think it's fantastic. And I think that it, I mean, and clearly there's a lot of evidence there showing that it's true. And I think it's really important for us when we are talking at this national level to really do our best to not create more divisiveness. So when you're creating a headline, when you're writing an article, definitely, you know, put the facts, put the poll numbers in there that might show the divides. But how are you going to craft it? Are you going to craft it in a way that shows that there's this giant divide and it's awful and we're never going to come together again? We're going to crash and burn. Or is it, boy, there are a lot of different opinions. Here's what we really do care about that is so similar. I think that it's all in how you choose to frame it. And a lot of people are in a lot of positions of responsibility to frame it well. And I would just, I know I would love reading more headlines that frame things that way, but also that highlight the truth in the numbers. And I think that that's really important.
Dana, I want to come back to you on this theme that Timothy Phillips brought up, because what I liked about it is I spend most of my time covering politics. I know you spend a lot of time writing about it. And what I'm always struck by when I'm out at campaign events and talking to people on the left, on the right, Trump supporters, supporters of Democrats running for president, once you get past the sort of big headline about what they're against and sort of start talking to them about what they're for, I'm always struck by how people are closer than you would think. I'm just wondering if you feel the same way.
That is absolutely true. And that's what I was saying earlier, and that people actually agree on the policy, on the substance. There are there's broad consensus on many of these things. And you can see it in polling, in focus groups. If you ask about things in the generic before saying Trump believes this or Democrats believe this, you'll get a pretty wide agreement. Then as soon as you add in party identification, boom, everybody goes to their corners and immediately goes to that. So I think that's the key, is keeping it on substance to the extent that is possible. And I agree it would be ideal if in the media we could appeal more to that substance. I have tried to do that. I do find that because media is so siloed, more and more, particularly in the opinion world, the only people who are reading you, as best I can tell, are people who agree with you. And it's sort of the social media effect of just being able to choose your own echo chamber and sharing with people who agree with you. So as much as we try to reach beyond that, I'm not sure it's really even possible anymore.
Listeners, we're talking about how to navigate tricky conversations around the Thanksgiving dinner table, tricky conversations being about politics in these divided times. Let's go to Sid, calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Sid. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, brother. So basically, the thing that's happening in my family is we end up having two separate Thanksgivings, one for the left, one for the right. I'm on the one on the – but it's not even intentional. It's just because, like, I'm on the one that de facto turns into the right, but we reach out.
Did we lose Sid?
Oh, no.
Oh, Sid, wait. Sid, back up a little bit. We lost you for a moment.
Dude?
Yeah, we hear you now. You said you have two Thanksgivings.
Go
ahead.
Can you hear me, dude?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so we are within proximity of each other, right? So we're like 80 miles away from each other. We could easily do Thanksgiving together. We want to do Thanksgiving together. They don't. Because I think the thing is that they're like hardcore leftists, and they view this I think that they view us as actually evil. So they're viewing it in terms of like official morality, whereas we're just like, we just don't want more immigrants here. We like being white. We don't care. You know what I mean? And we want them to come over, but they don't want to. They think we're evil, and we're like, we're the same way you were 10 years ago. They're just, they just do whatever they're told.
Sid, I got it, and thanks for the call. Lynn Parsley, any advice as a family counselor to Sid's family?
Yes. I would hope that they would meet somewhere, somehow. And it's very helpful to start or pretty early in the conversation to say, let's talk about what, on your point of view, you're not entirely comfortable with, and I'll tell you what, on my point of view, I'm not entirely comfortable with. In other words, let's say something about gay marriage or women's reproductive rights or something like that, and to say, here's what I would generally say, but, I still have a little question about where I stand on that. There are things I'm just not quite comfortable with. So, again, that you're not so dogmatic, where you're saying, oh, the other side is pure evil and we're the good guys, is to go, there's somewhere that there are holes in our points of view, and if we admit that or invite conversation about where the holes are in our points of view or what we can grant each other, then it softens the conversation. And again, you start with the intention, who are these people to me? Who do I want them to be for a lifetime? And I want to tell you a quick story. I was in a hospital waiting room on Monday, and two volunteers started talking about radio talk shows, and so I joined in the conversation, and my first thought was, this man right here talking is saying things that I don't agree with, but I start by going, he's got to be a good guy because he is a volunteer. And so we started having a conversation back and forth, and he would say something, and I would say, I grant you that. And every time I said, I grant you that, his face softened a little bit more. And then he started granting things to me. And 20 minutes later, it was time for me to leave. I got up, I shook his hand, wished him well. And it ended on such a good note, even though we said really controversial things back and forth.
Really interesting. Lynn, I wanted to come back. I meant to ask you this earlier because my producer told me a fascinating story that you told her before the show in terms of this idea of agreeable disagreement. She talked about an experience you had meeting your sorority sisters recently. Do I have this right? And the subject of guns came up. I want to hear about that because it fascinated me.
Oh, I have these wonderful sorority sisters, and we were up in a cabin in the mountains for a long weekend together. There was about eight of us. And of the eight of us, five of those women had guns with them. And that's not where I would go with gun control, but we had conversations about it, and I felt like we listened to each other, and there were comments made that I thought, I'm not even going to touch that. To preserve the unity of the group and the harmony of the group. But there we were, sitting there drinking wine and talking about guns, and I had some real strong feelings about some of the things that were said, but just kind of lobbed a soft blow over, and that brought back their opinions and their reasons for believing, and it turned out really well. But it was humorous to me that out of eight of us, five of those women had guns with them.
These are the times we live in. Let's go to Corey. He's calling from Enfield, Connecticut. Corey, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to touch base on a couple points that were made that really resonated with me. First, the thing your guest mentioned about the echo chamber, I feel like a lot of the anti-partisan kind of this is my side, this is your side, clear defining lines are really starting to lead us into confirmation bias a lot of the time. And I feel like that's really stifling the discussion because a lot of good debates on beliefs and politics, they start with you giving up ground somewhere. I mean, for an example, a lot of people that I know mostly lean to the right, but they have some either centrist or leftist values that they also believe, but nobody wants to start with that. They want to start with the main issue, the big things that they want to tackle, the things that they want to tell someone else, no, you're wrong, this is what's real, this is the fact. When I feel like nobody wants to start and say, well, this is one thing that my side, the left or the right side, doesn't believe, but I do. And I feel like that's just a great place to start to kind of work your way towards understanding. Because if you begin a conversation with understanding, it turns into a debate, not an argument. And from
Corey,
years and years of family Thanksgiving debates, I really think that's what helped.
Got it, Corey. I really appreciate the call. You put some great ideas on the table. Dana, I loved what Corey was talking about, this echo chamber leading to confirmation bias and essentially shutting down the ability to kind of hear each other.
Yes, I agree, and this happens all the time. And you know, I admit, I as an opinion journalist, I am occasionally guilty of name calling and all the other things I try to deplore. But I do think if you can, an earlier caller had referred to his relatives as hardcore leftists. Well, of course, they're not coming to Thanksgiving if you're calling them hardcore leftists. and if they're really calling him evil, well, I can't see why he'd want to have Thanksgiving with them either. So it happens on both sides. You know, you don't call them socialists, even if you think they are. Don't call them racists and fascists, even if you think they are. Just as I was writing this week about Franklin Graham, who has a great deal of influence and says the people who oppose Donald Trump are demonic.
Right.
Well, how are you going to have a discussion after you start with that? It's like saying the other side doesn't like America. You got to get away from that if you're going to have a conversation.
Absolutely. Dana Milbank, op-ed columnist at The Washington Post covering national politics. Thanks so much for joining us today. Really
My
appreciate
pleasure.
It. And Lizzie Post, co-president of the Emily Post Institute. Lizzie, it was great having you. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Lynn Parsley, marriage and family counselor based in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Lynn, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
To you also.
And to all of you listeners, here's to raising a glass tomorrow and wishing that we could all come together for the common good. Have a great Thanksgiving. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.